Week, beginning a new series, we're going to go through the letters of John. A lot in there that we can learn from and we can apply today. In preparation for that, I want to give a message from the Old Testament in Deuteronomy chapter 7. In Deuteronomy chapter 7, specifically looking at verses 17 through 26, we find these words. If you should say in your heart, these nations are greater than I, how can I dispossess them? You shall not be afraid of them. You shall well remember what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all Egypt. The great trials which your eyes saw, and the signs and the wonders, and the mighty hand and the outstretched arm by which the Lord your God brought you out. So shall the Lord your God do to all the peoples of whom you are afraid. Moreover, the Lord your God will send the hornet against them, and those who are left and hide themselves from you perish. You shall not dread them. For the Lord your God is in your midst, a great and awesome God. The Lord your God will clear away these nations before you, little by little. You will not be able to put an end to them quickly. For the wild beasts would grow too numerous for you. But the Lord your God will deliver them before you and will throw them into great confusion until they are destroyed. He will deliver their kings into your hands so that you will make their name perish from under heaven. No man will be able to stand before you until you have destroyed them. The graven images of their gods you are to burn with fire. You shall not covet the silver or the gold that is on them, nor take it for yourselves, or you will be ensnared by it, for it is an abomination to the Lord your God. You shall not bring an abomination into your house and like it come under the ban. You shall utterly detest it and you shall utterly abhor it, for it is something banned. Israel's foes, and Israel had a number of them, not just one, but Israel's foes, from what God is saying here and what we know from Old Testament history, is Israel's foes were far superior in numbers, in the amount, than they were. What's that? Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 17 through 26. There were many nations arrayed against God's people. There were a lot of nations in Canaan, in the land of Canaan, in what was known as the Promised Land at the time. Besides what they had to deal with Egypt, all the other nations, and all those other nations did not follow God. They did not follow Yahweh. So they were far superior to them. Now you have to think that, remember that when God is talking here through Moses to the children of Israel, by this time, remember how many people came out of the land of Egypt? What's that? Say roughly. 2 to 3 million. That included wives and children and others, right? It says that there were over 600,000 as far as that were capable of men who were capable to fight. So when you're talking 2 to 3 million of people, and then God says that they're in greater number, these other nations are in greater number than them. Do you see how overwhelmed they could be and afraid? And not only that, but these other nations, like in Egypt and that, and these other nations had probably more weapons and everything than they did. However, Yahweh, the Lord of hosts, was with Israel. What he says verse 19, so shall the Lord your God, Yahweh, the Lord of hosts, do to all the peoples of whom you are afraid. Brothers and sisters, we have foes today. Not nations as such, although there are those nations who, would like to destroy us, and there are people who would like to destroy us, whether we're Christian or not, right? But as Christians, we have foes today. We have foes as far as the church is concerned, and we have foes as far as we individually are concerned. And those folks sometimes we don't think about, but they are things that impact upon us and upon our lives. But just as Yahweh, the Lord of hosts, was with the Israelites, the children of Israel, do we realize he's still with us? He's still with the church. He's still with us. He's still with us individually. I do believe we have got to come to grips with the fact. And I think we all know this, but sometimes we forget about it, or we not necessarily don't forget about it, but we don't really think about the fact that we are in a war. We're in a holy war. This reminds me, it's not what Paul said in Ephesians 6. Verse 12, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Now, Paul was talking, saying that to the church at Ephesus, but is it done and over with? Doesn't that pertain to us as well? We are in a war. And I call it a holy war, if you will. Not a jihad, like the Muslims say. But we are in a war, in a holy war. Because it's a war against the world. Those who are outside of God, outside of Christ, and do not want to follow him. And against him. And that includes us. Because when we say we are with Christ, it opens the door. It opens the door to our foes. And you look at verses 17 through 21 there, and the first thing you see is the apparent superiority of the foes, of the enemies of Israel. They indeed were far superior. But look at what God says. He said, he knows them. He said, if you should say in your heart, these nations are greater than I, how can I dispossess them? He said, you should not be afraid of them. You remember what I did, Pharaoh and all of Egypt. Remember that, it says. And the last part of verse 19. So shall the Lord your God do to all the people of whom you are afraid. Do you see that? Yahweh, God, is telling his people, you're afraid. And God is saying, why? Think back what I did. Now see, this is after the Deuteronomy is being written, was written by Moses while they're traveling through the wilderness. And how many years were they in the wilderness? 40 years in the wilderness. Because God told them, anyone that was of age that could go fight. Male from 20 years and up would die in that wilderness. That's what he said. Why? Because they were afraid. Wasn't that the attitude that kept them out of the promised land to begin with? Remember what the 10 of them said, and they came back and said, oh, no way, we can't do that. Why, we're like grasshoppers in their sight. And we all know how small a grasshopper is. Crickets is even smaller. But they say grasshopper. Look, they're so big. They're so big and mighty. They outnumber us. They're so strong. No way. And all the people listen to who? We're talking 2 to 3 million of them now. And they all listen to who? They listen to Joshua and Caleb. Joshua and Caleb said, yeah, we can do it. But why did Joshua and Caleb say they could do it? Because they knew who was behind them. They knew that God was going to do it. But those 2 to 3 million people listened to the 10, didn't they? Now, we're not going to listen to you. We're going to listen to them. And then we know God's response to that. And then we remember our Old Testament history. The people finally, all right, okay, we did wrong. We sinned. We'll go ahead and do it. And God told them, I'm not going to be with you. And they went up and tried to do it anyway, didn't they? And they got their tails beat too, didn't they? Because God wasn't with them. Because they weren't thinking about him to begin with. And that he was the one that was going to drive them out. How can we dispossess them? Look at us. What about the church today? What about the people of God today? Here in this wonderful 21st century, we have all this wonderful technology and stuff. Who's people think is the answer to everything. And I say, well, yeah, you can use it, and it is useful, but it's not the answer to everything. But what about us today as Christians, the people of God? Do we not think sometimes that in our lives, and in the church, we face many, quote, impossible, and what some would even say, insurmountable odds or difficulties in our life. Do we not? But when we get to thinking about that, see, we may have the tendency to say, well, how can I do it? How can I overcome this? How can I do this? How can I overcome it? Think about the growth of the church. How can we make the church grow? And get people in.
we begin to think about the difficulties and whatever it is maybe in our life, that we can't overcome it because we say, but who are we forgetting about? We're forgetting about Him. You see, I or you can't. But He can. And I still believe that. That doesn't mean, though, that we just sit back on our blessed assurances, our backsides, and suppose everything's going to work out. But it does mean doing what we can for the Lord, whatever that may be. I think so often, you ever think about what Jesus said when his disciples wanted him to put away the children? You know, the children were coming to him, and you can imagine him sitting on his lap, and he's talking to them and that. And his disciples went to what? Lord, tell them to go away. Hey, we got more important things here to do. You're teaching us. You can imagine what they were saying, and what they're thinking, and really telling them, hey, get them little rugrats out of here. Remember what Jesus said? Don't forbid them to come to me. Let them come. And He said that we should have what? Faith like a child. What did He mean by that? To have faith like a child? What's that?
Totally trusting.
Mm-hmm. What's that, Jeff? Yes, totally trusting. Without doubt. Now, they may not have had, in Jesus' day, those children that came to Him, may not have had all the ins and outs of who Jesus was. Do you think they did? They may not have had that. But yet they wanted to come to Him. And He welcomed them. And He said, the kingdom of heaven is like that. What He was telling His disciples and what He tells us, they trust Me. They believe in Me. They trust Me. Forbid them not to come. For such is the kingdom of heaven. That's what He said. And it seems to me that after we become a Christian and we've lived, for a while and that, it seems sometimes that when we become a Christian and we become an adult, somehow, some way, we lose that faith, don't we, of a child, the total trust. And so things happen in our life, and we even think, I can't do this. I can't overcome this. And what people have done, and what we do when we do that, we've lost that faith as a child, like that total trust. Because, brothers and sisters, whatever the issue is, whatever it may be, whether it's and I'm not saying that people don't have issues in their life. They do. Not saying the things that happen don't, because we know that they do. But how we deal with those things. Sometimes we need to turn to someone and to get the help. Not like Job's counselors. You remember Job's counselors. Not like them. But people who really can empathize and really help, can really help. God will guide us to those. But He wants us to think, I can't. He doesn't want us to think that. I can't do it.
I can't overcome it.
He wants us to think, you can't by yourself. But I will give you some. I will give you others who can help you. And I can. What does the scripture mean when Jesus said, when Paul said, I can do what? I can do all things through who? Through Christ, who strengthens me. Sometimes people have a tendency to forget that. And that's why God, and why this is so important, what God is trying to get through to his people. Remember what he said in reading Deuteronomy 7, you read Deuteronomy 6, you remember what he said there. He said, I want you to take these things, and I want you to put them on your forehead, on wrist. And now Jews, they took that literally, and they made big boxes, and some of them still wear those things, you know. The Orthodox Jews and Hasidic Jews still wear those big things on their foreheads and that. I forget what they call them. What's that? Phylacteries. They have a special name for it now. It starts with a T, but I can't remember how it's pronounced or what it is. But anyway, they still do those things. But God wasn't saying, he wasn't telling his people literally. What he was saying is, I want you to have my law, my word, so much within you that you're going to teach your children, you're going to teach your grandchildren, they're going to teach their children, and it's going to be carried on, it's carried on. Did they do that? No. They did not do that. And that's what he's saying here. He's saying, he's telling them, you're afraid. You don't have to be. Because I, Yahweh, am here. If you will put your faith and your trust in me, I will drive these foes out. God still works that same way today. He's telling us that same thing today. And that's what we also need to take to heart within the church. It's not think that anything, whether it's church, our church growing, or whatever it may be, to think that it is insurmountable. Because he, God, and Jesus said, nothing's going to happen to my church. We may think, I've heard it said nowadays that the church is on its deathbed. The church is on its death throes. If we don't, we don't start doing these things, start showing this, the church is going to die. You believe that? They've been saying that for years. Jesus said the gates of Hades will not be able to overcome it. And if he said the abode of the dead, the gates of Hades, will not be able to overcome it. What makes us think it's going to disappear all of a sudden? It's going to be written off the pages of history. The church is done, they want to say. No. He says, Paul said in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20, now to him who is able to do far more abundantly beyond all that we ask or think. You get that? Even beyond all that we can ask or think. He's able to do it. Now, it's not good. I do believe this. It's not good to dwell on the past. But, however, it is good to reflect on it. There's a difference between reflecting on the past and dwelling on it. Because dwelling on it means that we can't get beyond it. Reflecting on it means we're looking back at the past and we're learning from it so that we go on. That needs to happen both with us individually and within the church. Not to dwell on the past, but to reflect on it. What Paul tells us, what he's telling the children, God is telling the children of Israel here. As the Lord has done, so he will do. Now, you look at verse 22, though. We think of the superiority of their foes, and we think of the superiority of the foes within our own lives and within the church today. And we want them all to be taken care of just like that, don't we? Can you imagine what the children of Israel thought that too? Okay, God, you said you're going to take care of it. All right. You know, after the 40 years in the wilderness and they begin to go into the promised land, telling Joshua and Caleb, because they're the leaders now, they say, God said he'd drive them out. He said he'd drive them out. Well, they're still here. How come they're not being driven out? He said he would do it. You can imagine the children of Israel thought they wanted that done just like that, huh? God's going to do it. So we just snap our fingers and God's going to do it. Be done, like overnight. Many people think that same way with problems in their lives and in the church. Think all they got to do is, okay, God, you said you would take care of it, so take care of it. Why isn't it done over with? Should be done now. You can think that even that's what they thought. But you know what? You look at verse 22 there. God said he wouldn't drive them out overnight or even in 1 year. In fact, you look at Exodus chapter 23, verses 29 through 30. Now, God said he would, through them working, them doing, he would drive them out. But he wouldn't drive them out overnight or even in 1 year. Did you know that they were forbidden to do so? You look at Exodus chapter 23, verses 29 to 30. Look at what he says. I will not drive them out before you in a single year. Notice that? That the land may not become desolate and the beasts of the field become too numerous for you. I will drive them out before you little by little. Until you become, notice this, until you become fruitful and take possession of the land. And then verses 31 to 33 there. Especially in verse 31, he lays out the boundaries. And did you know the children of Israel never really possessed whole promised land? You read that verse 31 there and you see how far the promised land stretched. They never fully possessed it. But God said he was going to do it gradually. Now when we relate that to today, we also, as individual Christians and as a church, we have adversaries out there. That's what Ephesians 6 says. And the adversaries that come to the church come our way, and they come to us individually. Guess what? We're not going to drive them out overnight or even in 1 year. It's going to take time for that to happen. It's a gradual process. That's what people have to get about sanctification.
When we become Christian, the scriptures tell us that we become sanctified. Sanctification, what sanctified means is we are set apart. That's what it means. But it means to be set apart for a task. But what many people think is that when they become a Christian, they've been blood bought, cleansed, and sanctified. And we're saints. Sanctified, see? But what they miss is they think that it's done. But sanctification, what the scriptures teach us, sanctification is a process. We grow in our sanctification. How we become fruitful in our lives is by growing in that process of sanctification. And you and I can't do it alone. And we can't do it overnight. And we can't do it in 1 year. We need one another, but we do it through Him. See? It's a gradual process. But there is one foe. There is one foe we will never be able to overcome. You know who that foe is? It's a who. It's a he. It's our archenemy. You see, our archenemy is not the Muslims. Our archenemy is not the non-Christians out there in the world. We're going to talk about that when we come to through the letters of John. Our archenemy is not them. Our archenemy is the devil. Our archenemy is Satan. And throughout our lives, brothers and sisters, until the moment we become a Christian, until we die, he will be our archenemy. And we ourselves cannot overcome him. Not us, ourselves, individually. Not even the church can. Who can? Christ can. You see? But that old archenemy is Satan. It's going to be there until when? Until Jesus comes again. And Jesus brings space-time to a close as we know it. And he will vanquish Satan and his minions. That's what the scriptures teach. I heard an old story about a farmer met this theological student. And this theological student, the farmer was reading Revelation. And the theological student said, he laughed at him, you know, and he was mocking him and everything, because this old guy, farmer, he's reading Revelation. Kid says, "Grandpa, you understand what you're reading?" And he laughed and he said, "What you reading there?" "Revelation." He laughed again and said, "You understand that?" Because he didn't think he had any education, you know. And the kid looked at him and said, "Okay, you say you understand it. What's it all about?" And the old farmer looked at him and said, "Christ and we win." He didn't have any more to say after that. Because in essence, that's what the book of Revelation is teaching us. Is that he wins in the end. If we're with him, if we're with Christ, we win in the end. And in verses 20 through 26 of Deuteronomy 7 there, God lays out for them the rewards and the demands of faithfulness. And notice what he says there, first of all, the demands. And this comes down to us today as well. He says, put away all idols. He said, burn them. Get rid of them. That's demand. That's a condition. God, people want to say God's not conditional. Look at what he says. He says, not only that, do I want you to burn all the idols that you come upon in that? And you get rid of them? But I also want you to keep away from all forms of evil. That's a condition. That's a demand he has. What he was telling the people there. And then he said, you be totally committed to who? You be totally committed to me. To Yahweh. Is what he says. So let's bring this down to us today. The moral and spiritual implications for us today here. We've read, some people have heard, and we've read in a couple of, some of these celebrity preachers and teachers, leaders and that, walking, what they're saying, being deconstructed, as said last week, being deconstructed and walking away from the faith. Not being Christians anymore. And I think the reason why they want to say that publicly and make such a big thing about it, because they want what? They want others to follow them. It's a ploy of Satan, I do believe. That comes down to us today as well, you see. No part of idolatry, whatever that may be, in their day, and it comes to our day too, should be coveted, let alone taken. The Lord would have every Christian, every church, every Christian destroy and obliterate every vestige of sin and evil in their life. That's what he wants of us. That's part of that process, you see, of sanctification. That's why Jesus told his disciple, Matthew chapter 6, when he gave him the tell us how to pray, teach us how to pray. He said, pray, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from what? From the power of evil. That still needs to be our prayer today. Because, brothers and sisters, I think many of these celebrity preachers and so forth that are backing away from the faith, being deconstructed in the faith, they've been led into temptation, have they not? And they've given in to it. And we must not do that. Because there are rewards for faithfulness for us. As we learned in the book of Romans 13, verses 12 through 15. The night is almost gone, and the day is near. Therefore, let us lay aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us behave properly as in the day, not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual promiscuity and sensuality, not in strife and jealousy. You think that pertains to today? Oh, I think it does. Notice what he says. But put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh in regard to its lust. And when we do so, when we do that, what scriptures tell us is that we will receive a reward. That's a reward of faithfulness. That's the crown of eternal life. And I don't know about you, but that's what I'm looking forward to, aren't you? As Tony said, what Paul said, do people really want, if they understand these things, do they really want to put it aside? Give it up? Really? But God will let them make that choice. You know that?
God will let them make that choice. But I don't understand it. Do you?
But, as Tony and I were talking, perhaps it is because those who are doing so never really had an understanding to begin with. That it was really never here. See?
There are demands upon our life, yes. But oh, the rewards of faithfulness. But in order to have that, it's what he says here. We have to trust and obey. And I believe, like what this one worship leader and band leader said, John Cooper, it's time the church quit looking to 20-year-old and above worship leaders and praise songs to get their theology. It's time for them to return to this and to get into it. And begin to really live by it. Now that's what we're going to be looking at when we look at the letters of John. Starting next week. Let's stand, we're going to sing, Trust and Obey. Brothers and sisters, that's really what it's all about. Is trusting in Him, having that faith like a child, and obeying. That is one of the most difficult things though, isn't it? It's that obedience part. But if we really want the rewards of faithfulness, that's got to come.